show planned for you tonight. And there's a lot of compassion in it, and I'm really excited to bring it all to you. Before we get into it, what I want to do is I want to say thank you to everybody who has tweeted out the show, retweeted it, shouted it out, who listens in, who just gives so much support. You know, you all mean so much to me, and it's very heartwarming and humbling for me. And I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. You all mean so much to me. And, you know, I want to get on with the show, really, because I only have Mark for about an hour, but maybe we can get him a little bit more. I don't know. We'll see. But usually what I do is I introduce the guest to us, you know, with a song first. And tonight, actually, I have an independent musical artist who I have known for quite some time now. His name is Layden Robinson, and I absolutely love his music. And I said to him, I said, Layden, I want to play your music on tonight's show. And he said, tell me what you need, Lady Renee. He's so much of a gentleman. And he is, his music is just beautiful. And his blue-eyed soul music is what he plays. So this first song, when he sent it to me, I said, this is perfect for tonight. So here we go. This song is called Almost Forever. And this is what's going to introduce Mark Anthony tonight.
Like so long since I've been with you. It seems like it's been so long since I've loved you. It seems like so long since I've touched you. Seems like so long, almost forever, almost forever. It seems like it's been so long since I've been with you. It seems like it's been so long since I've loved you. It seems like it's been so long.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, how you doing, Renee? It's great to be here.
It is awesome to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've been looking forward to the show, and I'd like to say hello to all the listeners, and I'm excited about just being here.
Well, I thank you for coming on, and I was telling you prior to the show starting that Jim Malyard and I kind of we work together in a way. We support each other's show. And he said to me, I wasn't able to listen to this one show that you were on. And he said, Renee, he said, you need to listen to this show and you need to get Mark on your show. And so here you are. And I'm eternally grateful because your book, you know, Never Letting Go, Heal Grief with Help from the Other Side, is absolutely fabulous.
Well, I really appreciate that. What's going on in the background?
That's my youngest one.
Oh, okay. Oh, so you're not in the studio. Okay.
Yeah, I'm in a studio. Yes, it's a studio.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yes. But, yeah, I mean, your book is absolutely fabulous. As a matter of fact, I purchased your book for my cousin, who I want to do the shout-out for, Cheryl, who her son, which is my cousin, had passed away a couple of years ago. And I said to her, I said, I want you to read this book. Because it's going to help. And she is reading it faithfully, and she's loving it. And so there you go.
Well, I'm very grateful and humbled that it has been able to help you. And it's been an amazing journey since I've written Never Letting Go, because I've had the opportunity to travel across the country to promote it and to attend book signings and lectures. And what's really fascinating is that we live in such an amazing country, and I come across people from all walks of life, all different ethnic backgrounds and cultural backgrounds and religious backgrounds. And the sad thing is that the one thing we all have in common is the fact that somebody we love is going to die. And it doesn't matter who you are, what your background is, socioeconomic status, anything. At some point in your life, someone you love is going to pass. And it is the most excruciatingly painful and most difficult test of our lives. And it's more than just feeling grief over the loss of somebody. It's an acknowledgement that you opened up your heart and allowed yourself to love, because we grieve as deeply as we've loved. And so a lot of people say, why did this have to happen? You know, I'm so devastated. And there's nothing that we can do about the fact someone we love has died. But what we can do is learn to change our perspective on death. And that is the intention behind Never Letting Go. Because people ask me about the title. They say, well, my, you know, grief counselor or my grief support group or my minister says that I need to let go. What the book means, or what the title means, is you must let go of the sorrow associated with the death, but you must never let go of the love for the person who died, because you're not anyway. So let's be realistic and practical about it. But it's the shock and the trauma caused by the death of a loved one, that's what we have to get through. And I don't say get over, because you never get over a loved one. You get through the shock, and then once the shock subsides, and what I mean, Renee, about the shock, it is when a loved one dies, and you've had people close to you pass, correct?
Yes, I have.
And you know how, and everybody that's listening, I'm sure you can relate to this, if you've lost a loved one, for the first couple weeks, it's like, you keep saying, I can't believe this happened. I can't believe she's dead. I can't believe he died. And it's like you're on the outside of your body looking in, and you're going through this nightmarish haze. And then all of a sudden that ends. In other words, the shock begins to fade, and then the reality sets in. And that's the trauma. So the shock is going to fade, but the trauma is what we live with for the rest of our lives. And that's what we have to deal with, because if you don't cope with grief properly, it can do a lot of really horrible things to you. It can take on a life of its own, and then it becomes your life. And I've encountered a lot of people in that situation. Or if you try to ignore your grief, and men, we tend to be really good at this. If I ignore it, it will go away. Maybe if I drink enough, or if I avoid it enough, or if I suppress it enough, it'll somehow go away, and the grief doesn't. It emerges in explosive behaviors, anger, alcoholism, rage, all sorts of other ways. So how we cope with loss is extremely important, and that's why my book, Never Letting Go, came into being.
Well, I think it's fabulous, and I love your outlook on it, because I'll tell you, I have dealt with and worked with myself a lot of people who are grieving, and you know, they do go to the counseling groups and everything, and like your book stated, it is like a vicious circle sometimes when you're in these groups, because sometimes some of the groups don't help you to progress. You know, it's almost like a complete depression that keeps going around and around and around, and they kind of like feed off of each other's emotions of the sorrow.
You know, Renee, that is such a good point that you brought up, and I've seen that time and time again with groups, and I'm not targeting parents who've lost a child, but it seems mm-hmm. to be very prevalent in the groups of parents. Because people do, they feed off each other's grief. And you know that old saying that misery loves company, and I'm not trying to marginalize or trivialize or in any way demean anyone's pain or loss, particularly the loss of a child. That is the most insidious and painful and horrifying loss, because when you lose a child, you're losing your future. It upsets the natural order of being. But I've found in a lot of these groups that people... They do. They feed off each other's loss, and then they act like, well, my pain is worse than anybody else's pain, and don't you tell me how to cope. I discussed this in Never Letting Go. I was asked to speak at a group, and I hate to say it, but it was a pity party designed to sustain the pain. People were showing pictures of their children and laughing about them like, oh, they were still alive, and then talking about them like they were still alive instead of acknowledging that they'd passed. Then it went from that into, I hate Halloween because it's for kids. And everyone's, yeah, I hate Halloween. I hate Easter because it's for children. Yeah, I hate Easter. I hate Christmas. And all it turned into was anger, hatred, anger, hatred. And there was absolutely no healing going on there. And a big part of getting through grief is acceptance of the reality of the loss. Because, Renee, the objective of getting through grief isn't that you're going to be all better and all happy. It is to find inner peace with the passing. And inner peace means that, you know, you will accept the reality of the death. Through that acceptance, you'll get to the point where your life is manageable. But if you just go on and hate, and avoid and deny, and go around showing people pictures and posting pictures of your children constantly on Facebook and all that, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that, you know, because we must honor and love these people. But when you are clinging to the physical, and that's another point that I bring up in Never Letting Go, is that you have to acknowledge that the physical aspect of your relationship is gone. And now your relationship with the person who died is one of a spiritual nature. So I find a lot of people clinging to that physical, and they act and they talk and they carry on as if their loved one is still physically present. They may be spiritually present, but that's a different type of relationship than the physical relationship. And these are very important things for people to understand for you to successfully endure the grieving process.
Exactly. You know, and that's the whole thing, is you want people to get through it and get them to understand that, you know, we're all energy. And so our souls, our spirits, all, you know, they still interact. And it's being able to pay attention to the different signs that are around us, that they're letting us know that they're still here, that they love us, that they are happy. And that they want the sorrow to end for you. Because they're still with us, and if we just open up, we'll be able to see them, we'll be able to feel them, we'll be able to hear what they have to say.
I couldn't agree with you more. A big portion of Never Letting Go, the subtitle is Heal Grief with Help from the Other Side. I believe that spirit contact is an important tool in the journey through grief. it is not the be all and end all. I mean, there's people that come to me, and I did a reading for a really lovely lady last week, and I did a reading for her 6 months ago, and she had a child die, and unfortunately, I noticed there wasn't a whole lot of difference in where she is now as opposed to where she was 6 months ago, and she wants to make an appointment every 6 months, and an unscrupulous medium or psychic, and this is real important to look out for. If somebody like that comes to you, they'll say, oh, yeah, you need to come 3 times a week, or they'll start feeding you a ridiculous story that somehow your loved one's soul is in danger, and if you pay them, you know, $500 3 times a week, that somehow they can save them. There's a lot of – well, I know. It sounds ridiculous, but there's a lot of scam artists. And I was on NBC TV Miami being interviewed. There was a family of gypsy fortune tellers, and I'm not targeting people of that particular culture or racial background, but there was a particular family that had bilked people out of over $30 million through these psychic scams. And one was a very famous author. I think her name is Jude Devereaux, and her young son was killed in a car accident. And they somehow persuaded her to believe that unless she engaged their services, that somehow his soul would be in peril. Well, first off, that's a bunch of primitive, superstitious nonsense. Secondly, nobody's soul is in peril. We are immortal living beings, and when we separate from the confines of a material body, we return to our infinite state. And so when people try to scam you into believing those things, that's incredibly unscrupulous. Well, what's happening in the situation that I was describing with my client is that she is clinging on to the physical and not doing anything to progress forward. So I discussed with her, I said, you need to get into counseling, you need to get into group counseling, you need to go to support groups, and she agreed to do this. I also encourage people, and on my website, which is also by the same name of my book, Never Letting Go, there's a grief management section, and under the grief management section on my website, neverlettinggo.com, there are different coping techniques. There's a section on prayer, section on affirmations. There's a section for people who are trying to be supportive of someone who died or someone who has a loved one who died, because I give the 10 things you should say to someone in grief and the 10 things you should not say. Saying to somebody who lost a loved one, well, it's all part of God's plan. Let me tell you something. When you've lost a loved one, the last thing you want to hear is that's because of some kind of plan. The other thing you don't want to hear is, oh, well, he's in a better place. No. Better place is for him to be here. Or, well, she was old. And one of the worst things I've ever heard is you can always have another child.
Oh, my God. Sorry.
I know. It's horrific to hear things like that. This is a child. This is not a container of antifreeze. Oh, my car's out of antifreeze. Let me go get another can. You know, this is a unique human being. Or the other thing is, well, you have other children. It doesn't matter if you have 20 children. Each human being is a unique individual that is irreplaceable.
Oh, totally. I mean, that's horrible. I'm sorry, but I'm thrown back by that. You know, people could actually say something like that because, you know, we are all unique in our own way. And, you know, children are so pure, you know, little children, but everybody in reality is all unique. And you can't replace something like that.
Well, even though I'm a medium, I don't necessarily subscribe, and I'm not critical of New Age movement or New Age concepts, because, you know, my book will be found in the New Age section of Barnes & Noble and every other bookstore in the country. But there's this notion, oh, death is an illusion, and I've heard that. Now, yeah, I know. Tell that to the parent of a child who has died, okay? And you're looking to get your jaw broken, because people don't want to hear death is an illusion. Now, I understand what they're saying in the infinite spiritual sense, because energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transferred. Our spirit is energy, ergo it's, you know, the energy of our spirit pre-exists our body. So when our body dies, who and what we are lives on. So from the philosophical and esoteric standpoint, I understand that. However, we are living in the material world, and we are here for a reason. And part of that reason is to go through life lessons and understand what it is to exist in a finite and limited state. And unfortunately, one of the life lessons and one of the great tests that we must undergo is coping with loss. And it hurts. And it hurts beyond pain. So don't tell somebody, even if, you know, you're all groovy and nirvana and you meditate 10 times a day and have lunch with the Dalai Lama the second Tuesday of every October, please don't tell somebody that death is an illusion, because it isn't, at least not in the material world sense. It's very painful and very hurtful. So the types of things that we can say to people after a loved one has died, you think you might be helping them or being supportive, but you're not. And saying, well, you're young and pretty, you can meet another guy. It's like people don't want to hear things like that.
No. And that's true. You know, and one of the points you also had brought up that I find very interesting, and you know, this is true, is that at some point in time, and usually during a loss, that people start to question about God. Is
yes,
God
they
real?
Do.
How could God do this?
How could God do this to me? And I completely understand that. And the second chapter of Never Letting Go is entitled Doubt is Part of the Journey. Because a friend of mine, and I'll share a small snippet of Never Letting Go, he's a medium, very sensitive guy, you know, he's a good medium, and his mother died. And he called me up, and he was all upset, and he goes, is it all real, Mark? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, what we do, is it real? And I said, James, I know how you feel, because I too have lost my mother. I said, you have been shaken to your very foundations, and you're going through doubt. He goes, but I shouldn't be going through doubt. I said, well, you know, even Mother Teresa went through a period of her life where she didn't believe in God. I mean, come on, we're talking Mother Teresa. I mean,
right,
you know, if there was
right.
anyone who was connected. And then he came back with something that just really rocked my world. He said, come to think of it, on the cross, Jesus cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me?
Mm-hmm.
I said to him, I go, my gosh, I didn't even think of it like that. So when you doubt your faith in God because something horrible has happened and you've lost a loved one, realize that doubt is part of the journey. A rabbi told a good friend of mine, he said, how can you have faith without doubt? And you think about it, you know, all the great spiritual leaders, going back thousands of years, Buddha went through a time of doubt. Jesus went through a time of doubt, you know, certainly on the cross. We know Mother Teresa did. Many, many of the great spiritual leaders found themselves completely drained of their faith when they were facing the most difficult times of all. And that's all part of it. And getting through that, and you realize that God does exist. And people say, well, how could God do this to me? Once again, we are living in the material world for specific reasons, because on the other side, when we're in infinite spiritual form, we're energy. Energy doesn't get old. Energy doesn't get sick. Energy doesn't die. And therefore, coming into this life in a finite form, we can experience all those things. Now, I'm not professing to have all the answers. because, you know, I get a lot of the skeptics and the pseudo Christians who they think they're Christian but they're really not, because they like to cast the first stone and be judgmental and hateful and angry, and that's not Christian. I saw an interview with Shirley MacLaine, and she says the one thing the world has never really tried is Christianity.
Nice.
It's really funny the way she said that. It's something Gandhi said, too. One of my favorite quotes is, he said this to a group of British generals, "I like your Christ, but I don't like you Christians because you don't act like your Christ." But the thing is... and I don't want to bash, you know, any particular religion, because I consider myself a Christian. I was going to be a Catholic priest, so I do understand Christianity, and I do have an understanding of its teachings, you know. But people write, "Oh, so you say you know everything?" No, I don't. I have questions. I have insights, but I don't have all the answers. And when you work with communicating with spirits, like I do on pretty much a daily basis, you begin to gain an understanding. Plus, occasionally spirits will answer some pretty cool questions, like, you know, what's it like over there, and, you know, and all that. And a lot of times what their response is that you can't understand what it is. And to me, that's like a big cop-out. So one time, I know I'm going off on a tangent, Renee, but...
No, that's okay.
Like,
go for it.
I said, you know, you guys always tell me that. Well, come on, try me. Give me something. What is it like over there? What do you do over there? And they said, you can't even begin to imagine what it's like because it's pure energy. Mm-hmm. Now, in the next book that I have coming out, I'm just finishing it up and I'm getting it ready to go to the publisher. And it's funny because people say, when's your book coming out? Like next month? It's, let me tell you something. When you submit a book to a publisher, figure on about a year. Okay.
Exactly.
Because there's a whole process. And unless you're like a celebrity like a Sarah Palin or someone like that, and all of a sudden you're a flash in the pan, 3 months later you have a book, which probably you didn't write anyway, comes out because it's strictly, they know it's going to sell a million copies right away. And then, you know, 6 months later be on the 50 cent discount rack. Because that's the way the publishing industry works, you know.
It's
like, and I'm not crashing on Sarah Palin, but you know, when her book came out, okay, yeah, well, she became a celebrity, sort of, kind of, and then her book got real, real popular, but then, quite frankly, 6 months after the book came out, does anyone really care what she had to say in it? Okay, but hey, you know, she got her due, and she got her book out there, so that's really good. But for serious books, there's a longer and slower process to it becoming on the shelf. And in the new book, I delve into some pretty heavy concepts about what is it like to be pure energy, what is the other side like. And the difficulty that we have trying to understand the other side is because it's eternal, it's eternity, and it's infinite. So we are wearing a finite pair of glasses and trying to look at infinity through a finite perspective. We may gain some insights, we may catch a few glimpses of eternity, but that doesn't mean that we will understand it.
Exactly. And, you know, I tell people that I, you know, all the time, I play with the other side every day, you know, and they kind of look at me kind of strange, you know, but I'm always getting, you know, people from the other side. And it's the same thing. It's like, you know, what is it like over there? You know, and, you know, you can astral project and, you know, go from one place to another, but that doesn't even come close to how busy it is over there and what they actually do, you know, because just like here on Earth, there's lessons to be learned still on the other side, too.
It's true. And what I have found is a lot of times during a reading, people say, well, where is she? You know, the client will say, where is she or where is he? And all of a sudden, I'll get this beautiful image of maybe them sitting in a park or on a beach or on a mountaintop or in a, you know, a special cozy little house or whatever. And 9 times out of 10, the client will say, oh, well, that was so-and-so's favorite place in the whole world. It was funny, one time I was doing a reading for this guy, and his mom came through and his dad came through. And his mother's idea or projection of heaven was like this Tuscan-style villa overlooking the Napa wine country in California. And his dad's was like this log cabin up in the mountains of Kentucky. And the client goes, yeah, you know, mom, you know, he goes, mom wanted to live like in this palace in the wine country, and dad was like a mountain man. And what it is, I believe what the spirits are doing is they're giving us a point of reference, something that you and I can actually relate to and understand. And they'll pick one of their favorite places. And the feeling that comes when I'm connecting with that, I get this light feeling in my body, and I feel very uplifted and happy because they're saying I'm in heaven and I'm giving you something you can explain. Now, are they really in a Tuscan-style villa overlooking the Napa Valley? Are they really in a favorite log cabin next to a stream? Probably not, but you and I cannot understand what it's like to live in pure energetic form. So they give us a point of reference. And it's really kind of fascinating when a spirit will do that. And then I've asked, well, what do you do? You know, what do you guys do over there? and they always indicate how busy they are. And then it dawned on me from a connection that a spirit said, you know, we're energy. We don't get tired and we don't sleep. And I'm like, well, that must be very productive. And it's funny because a lot of clients say, well, don't you think heaven would get boring? And it's always funny because I get the impression that spirits laugh at that question because, once again, we're judging the finite or the infinite through the finite. And they don't get bored. They don't get tired. And so they say that they're constantly learning. They're evolving. And they're expanding their knowledge. So just because you cross to the other side, that doesn't mean that you're immediately all-knowing, all-seeing, although you have access to information and to perceptions that we can't even conceive of. So when they do give us these snippets of what we can't understand, it's not that they're being unkind, but what they tell me is that there's no way in the form you're in that you completely grasp it, so we'll do our best. It would kind of be like a PhD in physics explaining Einstein's theory of relativity to a nursery school class.
No, it's true. It's very true. I mean,
yeah, you know, it's like you can bring in some models and go, yes, this is, you know, energy and this is matter times the constant of light squared. It's like kids can be like, shiny, you know. They're not really going to get what the full magnitude of that theory or that law of physics would be. And that's okay. And that's okay. Spirits certainly don't mind reaching out to us, and they do connect with us, and they are concerned about our well-being, particularly when we are suffering over their loss. And they feel compassion and love, which is why they reach out to us.
Yeah, and it is true. And I totally believe that when you think of a spirit, somebody who has passed, you know, that it's very common that you pull them into you. You pull them, it's like you're calling them, you know, and a lot of times they'll appear. You know, like if I were thinking, say, of my grandmother or my friend who passed like 9 years ago, you know, and strongly thinking of them, it's like you pull them in. You're like getting their attention, and they still hear you.
Yes. And they do, because we're all energetically connected by the power of love, and it's all very complicated. But, you know, it was funny what you said earlier about you tell people, well, I work with the other side every day, and then people look at you like you've got three heads. And
well, maybe I do. I mean, they're getting used to it. I mean, I don't claim to be normal. I'm paranormal. So, I mean, no.
And it's funny because, you know, I deal so much with the other side, and being a lawyer too. I remember a couple months back I had lunch with a few other attorneys, and there. So Mark would even do, well, I've been on tour, promoting my book. You have? I go, yeah, I just got back from lecturing at Harvard and Brown, and they're like, you did? Well, what are you lecturing about? I go, life after death and communication with the spirit world. Yeah, we heard you do stuff like that, and it's like, really? Do you like live in a cave? You know, because where I live, I mean, it hit like ABC News, and all these people were, you know, on my case and all this. You're a devil worshiper and all that, and it's like, oh please, you know,
don't
I mean, the Bible.
Love that?
Well, you know, it's people fear the unknown, there's so many people that think that what we do is somehow evil or negative, and it's funny because there's something going around on all these Christian websites, and it's all this, you're dealing with familiar spirits and Satan, and I look at this, and I go, boy, you people spend a lot of time doing this. When's the last time you saved a baby from being aborted, fed a hungry child, found a shelter for a woman who's been beaten and abused, or, you know, helped somebody that was out of work and have a family find a job? Or what about helping people that can't afford their medicine to find money or to get medicine? Wouldn't that be more Christian than judging and casting the first stone simply because you're ignorant of something? And furthermore, I mean, if you want to dissect the Bible, there are as many passages in it which are supportive of what we do. Also, a lot of the people that just sling stuff out of the Bible, they're taking it out of context. I love it when they go, well, Leviticus says this and Deuteronomy says that, and mediums are not of God and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, yeah, well, Deuteronomy also says that I can sell my daughter into slavery and that I should kill my neighbor if he works on the Sabbath. Now, how can you possibly take one and not the other? Oh, and if your daughter is menstruating and goes into a temple that, you know, she should be condemned and all this stuff, and eating shellfish is an abomination. So if you go to the all-you-can-eat seafood bar and eat some shrimp, then you're committing an abomination. So, and also, it's not in the top 10. I mean, look at the Ten Commandments.
Yep.
Does it say thou shalt not be a medium or a psychic? It doesn't say that. But
Jesus, what about Jesus and Moses?
Yeah, what about Jesus and Moses and Daniel and Joseph David, and you can just go through the entire Bible, Abraham. I mean, all these people, did that, plus the Pentecost after Christ ascended to heaven. The Pentecost is a perfect example of channeling the energy of the Holy Spirit, you know, because when you do aura work and you start to see auras, and you notice that the crown chakra has sort of a flickery, because it's an energy that's moving around. Well, in the language of the day, it would be described as a tongue of fire. Okay, so in the Pentecost, where tongues of fire appeared above all the apostles' heads and that of Mother Mary and I believe Mary Magdalene, well, what they were doing is they were channeling the power of the Holy Spirit. So all these things are misunderstood by people who, what I think about religious fanatics, and I don't even call them Christians because there's a big difference between a Christian and a religious fanatic. A Christian follows the golden rule, treats other people the way he or she would like to be treated, does not judge, and shows compassion and mercy. Religious fanatics are people that run around, and they don't have to be Christian, they can be Muslim or Hindu or, you know, whatever, where they take their religious text as a justification to commit anger, bigotry, hatred, and violence. And so that's a religious fanatic. So there's a big difference between the two. And a number of my friends are Christian fundamentalists, and but they're open-minded, and we have discussions about what I do. One of them happens to be a Baptist minister, and he told me, he says, you know, Mark, what you have is a service gift. I go, okay, elaborate on that. He said, a service gift is a gift that God has given you that can help other people. So anything you do in the service of other people is a service gift. And then he went on to explain that a service gift can be being a good listener. being a good parent, being an auto mechanic, okay, because mm-hmm. these are things that you can do that help other people. He says, your gift is a little bit different. He goes, actually, it's a lot different. He goes, but he said you bring understanding to people and inner peace and resolution. He said there is nothing negative or evil about that. And then there's the skeptics like to rip us apart and say, well, then why don't you pick winning lottery numbers?
Oh, well, because you're not supposed to.
You're not supposed to.
That's not for the good of all. You're not supposed to. You're not supposed to know them.
Right.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it is horrible. I mean, if they want to give me, like, Powerball numbers for next Wednesday, if I'm getting the intention out there, I mean, I'll gladly do good with the money. But it's not – I mean, I always leave the door of possibility open, but the fact remains that's not what this gift is used for. And in the bigger scheme of things, and I'm going on record saying this, I would rather be able to do what I do than to win the lottery. Because it's such a humbling responsibility. But when I'm doing a reading for somebody, let's say a parent has lost a child, and I see those tears of healing come, and mm-hmm. or I hear in their voice some of that pain, even a few drops of it coming out of them, then that's why we're doing this.
Exactly. So. Exactly. And that's the whole thing. I mean, I've been called the devil. I have been called every name in the book for what I do. You know, I've even had people like recently, because I'm like, okay, everything is not demonic. That's like one of my pet peeves is everything's demonic. You know,
oh, the demon people are annoying. I mean, they're like, they'll find the devil everywhere. Watch out, there's a devil in your coffee. Oh, don't sit on the toilet because the devil might bite you in the wazoo. There's a devil here. Devil, 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 devil. It's like, okay, if you want to find the devil, look within.
Yep.
And one of the things I try to teach, and I believe that you're a subscriber to this too, is that the devil comes from our own ego. Ego, okay. E-G-O, edging God out. And whenever you've done something unkind, cruel, horrible, hurtful to another person, it's because you're acting in a me, self as center of the universe. When someone cheats on their spouse and they say, well, it just happened. No, it didn't just happen. You are acting self-centeredly. You are acting mm-hmm. selfishly. You know, illicit affairs just don't happen. They are made to happen by a choice. If you insult or humiliate another person in public, you're doing it because of self is center. If you steal, if you lie, I mean, if you go down, you could go through every horrible activity. So the devil is the animalistic, self-centered desires that we embrace and act upon. We don't need some moron with a pitchfork running around. And besides, when you study biblical history and the development of religion, the devil kind of, you know, was created over centuries. Outside of Jerusalem, there was a valley called Gehenna. And Gehenna is where people who could not afford a proper burial and criminals were thrown into lime pits and their bodies were burned. Gee, hellfire and brimstone. So as Christianity began to develop in the region of Judea and greater Syria, Gehenna was incorporated as, well, this is where you're going to go. Okay, well, then people say, well, what about in the Bible where the devil tempted Jesus? Well, Jesus taught largely by parable, like the prodigal son, the seven foolish and the seven wives, bridesmaids, the good Samaritan. And it is believed by many biblical scholars, myself included, that going into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, he was overcoming his material world desires and self as center of the universe to embrace his enlightened side. Now, let's take a look at Jesus. I get the whole, you know, born in poverty in Bethlehem and the manger thing, but through his mother Mary, he was a descendant of the house of David. Mary Magdalene, nowhere in the Bible does it say that she was a whore. That is a smear campaign developed in the 6th century century, 600 years after Jesus died, to solidify the male domination not only of the Christian church but of society in general. So he had to denigrate her. It is believed that Mary Magdalene was probably his wife and a descendant of the house of Benjamin. Okay, so you got two very influential people from Jewish families. Jesus was an incredible orator, psychic healer. I mean, he had it all. Okay, and he could have taken those abilities and become a great political figure or a great business person and given himself over to the world of materialism and wealth. Now, let's go 300 years before Jesus. Buddha was a prince born into a royal family, and so he already had the bucks. He already had the family, the lineage, and he went into the desert for 49 days and 49 nights and sat under a great tree and was tempted by Mara, the Lord of Death, also known as the Lord of Illusion, who tried to tempt him with beautiful women and scare him with armies of monsters and all this sort of thing. And Buddha rejected all of that and rejected his self as center of the universe and found enlightenment. Now, isn't it interesting that the two of the world's greatest religions, both of their central figures had an identical experience? This is a parable. It's a metaphor for the devil is within us, and it is by rejecting the darkness within us and embracing the light of God, which is the enlightenment and the wisdom and understanding and putting aside me, 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 I, that is where you find the true connection to God. And that is what I believe Jesus and Buddha were talking about, and that is what I believe the devil is a metaphor for, the negativity within us, as opposed to, you know, like a James Bond villain, central of command, running around with a pitchfork and all that. I think that that's just primitive, medieval, superstitious nonsense.
It is, and actually they say that Lucifer is actually very tempting looking. He's like very good looking. You know, he's very appealing to many. And that's why they say with the ego and everything else that anything like temptation, you know, is very tempting, of course, because Lucifer himself was very tempting.
Yeah. And,
does that make sense?
To me, that's still a metaphor, because I don't buy the whole fallen angel thing. I've connected and had several angelic entities come through during readings. And the type of readings that I do, I don't connect with angels. I mean, if they want to come through, that's fine. But I practice what's known as evidential mediumship. So in my readings, when somebody comes through, it's going to be somebody that you can identify based on the pieces of evidence that I convey to you. But occasionally an angel pops in, and I'll describe the angel. Let me tell you, no way are these beings negative. They are wise, they are great, they are good. And what a lot of people don't seem to understand is angels are not humans. Humans will not become angels. They are separate and distinct species. And there's a lot of several different, probably more than we can even fathom, different intelligent species in the spirit realm. I focus on communication with human spirits as opposed to, other type of beings, because that's the work that I do. And I don't buy the whole demon thing. I've been on ghost hunts and all that with people from TV and everything, and they're all like, demon, demon, demon. And I'm like, no, it's somebody's grandfather. And no, that's just a vibrational echo. That's not a sentient being. But what it is scary cells. I remember in the Oh God movie where George Burns, the one and only George Burns played God, and he said, they make a movie about a little girl that vomits green pea soup, he was talking about The Exorcist, and everybody goes nuts,
Yes. Yeah.
I hated that movie. I remember seeing that when I was
like
in
it.
High school. I couldn't sleep for weeks, you know, and now I know it's just, you know, and if you want to see a horror movie that'll really make you feel bad about everything, that would be the one to see. On the other hand, and it's funny too, because like right now there's all these paranormal shows, so everybody's house is haunted, 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 haunted. Well, I remember when The Exorcist came out, all of a sudden psychologists all over the country were getting patients who swore that they were possessed by the devil. Okay. I think there's just, you know, basically a lot of borderline personalities and schizophrenic personalities. And if you think about it, in prior to the era of modern psychology, when somebody was a schizophrenic, or somebody was like a Dexter, you know, sort of a pathological, you know, psychopath, the explanation was they were possessed by the devil. And I could understand that. I also understand that in medieval Germany, there was some guy that, like, brutally murdered all of these people. He was essentially a serial killer, a psychopathic killer, and that he was determined to be a werewolf. And I thought about that. I was like, well, that's really kind of interesting, you know, because they're using what they knew at the time, and there was a nice mild-mannered guy, or at least so they thought on the outside, turning out to be this horrific killer, and I guess he brutalized people in a very horrific way, so ergo he became a werewolf.
Nice.
Interesting stuff.
It is. Now, what do you... I know that, like, when you had mentioned, like, sociopaths in your book, and I know, like, when I look into the eyes of, like, even, you know, just the picture of somebody who's, like, committed murder, like, seriously, you know, or abductions and murders, you know, child and stuff, you don't see anything through their eyes. You can't read them.
No, you can't. And I was working with a group of mediums one time when I was in England, and we were talking about that, and they said, no, you can't read a sociopath or a psychopath. I mean, you can pick stuff up from them, but as far as reading them, and psychiatrists have concluded that sociopaths, now, sociopathology is... On the mild end, you have what's known as the borderline personality disorder. Then you get into the sociopaths. This is where you get into real dangerous personalities. And then the extreme is the psychopath. That would be like the Ted Bundy, the Jeffrey Dahmers, you know, the serial killer types. But sociopaths are considered to be incapable of the emotion of love. Now, that's fascinating. And terrifying at the same time, because if you're devoid of the emotion of love, then you're missing or unable to connect with the God energy. Now, I believe that the light of God and the life force is within all of us. And I also believe that these people come into this existence because there's a reason why they're coming into this, and they're the dark energies, if you will, that walk amongst us to inflict life lessons and suffering upon people. And once again, I'm not trivializing or marginalizing anyone who has suffered at the hands of a psychopath or a sociopath, because
right.
You know, in my practice of law, for many years, I've sat across the table from more than my fair share of sociopaths, and I do describe that in my book, Never Letting Go. And looking into their eyes, really, really scary. I'll never forget, and you can see it at a young age. I was representing this juvenile client. I think he was about 13 or 14.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed he had the eyes. And I called him, yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking about, Renee.
Yeah.
I called him Shark Eyes. I live in Florida, and I've seen more than my fair share of sharks, too. And when a shark looks at you, it's not looking at you like, oh, what a nice person. It's looking at you like an object that it wants to rip in two. And
mm-hmm.
this kid had those eyes. And he was there with his parents, and then he and his mother left. The father goes, oh, can I talk to you for a few minutes? I go, sure. And after his son left, he said, and he was real panic-stricken, he said, I'm afraid to sleep with the door unlocked in my house. He goes, I'm afraid he's going to come in and stab me.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, as well you should be. And all of a sudden he goes, really? I go, yeah. I said, I'm seeing something in this boy that you got to get him into treatment. Because my understanding is it can actually be reversed by the age of 18 with intensive psychotherapy. Now, I don't know if that is possible, but that's what the conventional psychological theory is. And I've had a number of parents that have said to me that I think my son's or my daughter is a sociopath, and that they're devoid of love. And sociopaths are not mentally ill by definition. Because they know the difference between right and wrong. It just doesn't matter to them, as opposed to somebody who's schizophrenic, who is incapable of determining the difference between right and wrong, and in some severe cases, between reality and non-reality. So sociopaths are predators. They can be extremely charming and endearing. Bernie Madoff, the guy who took who was the financial planner who just took billions from people, and that guy was horrible. And when told of the plight of his victims, he treated them with contempt. Because the thing about sociopaths, the more you treat them with compassion and love, the more they despise you and look down upon you. And so if you want to read more about that, my book Never Letting Go does touch upon that. And the reason that Never Letting Go talks about sociopaths is that many times after the death of a loved one, I chronicle a story of a gentleman been married for 50 odd years, and when his wife died, all of a sudden he hooked up with this younger woman. And there was another story about a woman in her 60s whose husband died of cancer. All of a sudden, this 27-year-old, real handsome young guy comes and just like siphons all her money out of her. Sociopaths are looking for victims, and people who have lost a loved one are oftentimes very vulnerable, and they are so emotionally damaged, they will embrace any form of affection. And the really sad part is sociopaths feed and seek out that sort of thing. And sociopaths are not all the criminal types coming through your window at 4 a.m. with a hatchet. Many times they are the Bernie Madoffs, the guy sitting in the pinstripe suit across the table from you. I've dealt with a lot of lawyers. I wouldn't say a lot, but at least a dozen or so that I'm pretty sure are sociopaths. And they'll cut you in two, more or less, for $20. You know, because everything with them is about power, control, domination, truth, justice. None of that means a damn thing. It's all about them and all about them reigning superior. And the fact of the matter is they're the ones in control, not their client. And according to the legal profession and everything that we hold dear in this country from a legal standpoint, the client is the one that technically is in control. But when you sign on with a sociopath, forget it. You are enveloped by them. And so the reason I bring that up in Never Letting Go and I'm bringing it up now is these are the other types of things that people who are going through the grieving process are not always on the lookout for, but you need to be.
Exactly. And it's true. It happens all the time. You know, and I don't even think it has to happen even with somebody who's grieving. You know, I think that, like you said,
oh no.
It can be really charming, you know, and very charming and stuff, you know, and then change at the drop of a hat, you know, the anger and everything else.
Oh, sure.
You know, so I think it happens more than people realize, you know.
Yes, sadly it does.
But it's interesting. Now, what's interesting about all of this, too, is that you were brought up in a family that was pretty much all psychic.
Yeah, I like to joke with people and say that my childhood was like the Sixth Sense meets Everybody Loves Raymond. Because, you know, my
I love
you know, it's like, I love Everybody Loves Raymond, but you know, my family, my mom's family was Italian, my dad's family very WASPy English, and both my parents had mediumistic abilities, and mom was like, you know, the super mega psychic, and you know, it wasn't weird to me, and when I was a little kid, you know, I just sort of would talk about my invisible friends and mom and say, oh, yeah, I see them too, you know, all that sort of thing. And then as I got older, I realized, you know, like, not everyone's mommy's like mine. and then, you know, I thought it was kind of cool. And it was funny because a lot of my friends, particularly when I was in college, you know, they all knew about my mom and everything. And because my parents at that time, they lived near the ocean. So my fraternity all decided to have a weekend at the beach, and they all brought their tents. And it's like, you know, a couple dozen guys camping out in the backyard and our, you know, fraternity little sisters and all that. My parents keeping a watch on everything. And mom started doing readings on the guys because they're all begging her to, you know. And at first they thought, oh, yeah, like whatever. And then I remember seeing the looks of shock and horror on their faces as she was telling them things about themselves and about things around them that nobody could possibly know. And there was this one guy, he was like the most stuck-up guy in the world, real arrogant, you know, preppy, good-looking, but, you know, just probably borderline sociopath. And she did a reading for him, and she said, I'll never forget, she was reading him, and she took a pause, and she goes, you will have an easy life. So then he's going around bragging, oh, she said, you know, Jeannie, the psychic said I'll have it. And I went up to Michael, why did you tell that jerk that? She goes, Mark, she goes, here's what I really got. He's a parasite. He's got no goals, no ambitions. He's just going to use people's whole life and amount to nothing. And she goes, you know, I didn't want to hurt his feelings, so I told him he'll have an easy life. She said, because he will, because it's going to mean nothing and amount to very little. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's where I learned that, you know, when you convey things. And I always have a problem with psychics that want to tell people negative things, or they start diagnosing and prescribing. You know, if you pick up on something about somebody's heart and say, you need, you know, and I'm getting broccoli, you must eat more broccoli, you got to be careful with that because the issue is the heart and the issue is broccoli. Maybe if they ate broccoli, it's going to kill them. So what you tell people is, I'm picking up on an issue about your heart, and I'm not telling you that it's good nor bad, it's an issue, so is broccoli, and I recommend and insist that you go to your doctor, and you have this checked out and find out if broccoli is the right thing to eat or whatever it is, you know. But you know, a lot of inexperienced mediums and psychics jump to these conclusions. You need to do this. Don't tell people what they need to do. Say, this is what I'm getting. But before you do this, you know, if it's a financial thing, check with your accountant, check with a financial planner. You know, just say, this is the issue. Because spirits are never wrong. What might be wrong is the interpretation of the information which comes through.
Exactly. Now, I don't know if it's like this with you, but sometimes some of the information that comes through to me, they like to challenge me. It comes in riddles.
Well, it depends
on who it is. But like if you know, somebody just pops in from the other side and they have something to tell me, sometimes – you know, I call them clowns because sometimes I think some of them are clowns. And they do a riddle. They'll give me like a riddle. Like they don't come right out and say, you know, all the time exactly what it is. They'll put it like in a riddle form. And I've got to try to decipher it. I don't know if that's ever happened with you.
Things like that have happened, but that usually doesn't happen. And what it is, Renee, it's a good that you brought up. We all receive information differently. I mean, we get it in the same way because it's all a vibrational thing. So
exactly.
As far as we receive it, but it's how – what I believe is that a spirit vibrates intelligence to us, and those waves of frequency that they're sending to us go into our brain. So the spirit's energy field interacts with ours, and then our brain interprets it into recognizable data, symbols, and information based on our memories, feelings, and cultural references. So – that may be something or a format that is familiar that you get, and you're good at solving riddles, so you get that. Other people may get more visual clues. Some may get more auditory clues. and others may get emotional feelings. I've known some mediums and psychics that only feel things. They don't hear or see it. And once they start learning how to read and interpret their emotional feelings, then the data starts coming through spot on. I've met other people that don't see things or barely hear things, but barely feel things, but they hear it. I mean, and that's really great when they start hearing things. And then there's people that just get visual things, and then there's people that get all three. So we all receive the information the same way, but how we process it is individualized. And I had these people. I did this, amazing reading. Their daughter came through, and it was like spot on names, dates, places, the whole thing. And at the end of the reading, the father goes, "Well, who's the best medium in the world? Because we'd like to go see them." And I'm like, I could not possibly have given a better reading. I mean, no, Edgar Cayce couldn't have given a better reading. And so I said, well, one of my mentors in England said the best medium in the world is the one that delivers you the message at a particular time when you need to hear that message and what you need to hear. So that is the best medium in the world. Because I always get a big kick out of when there are some mediums going, well, I'm the best in the world. Well, maybe you got a good publicist, okay, and maybe you get a lot of good media appearance. And I'm not saying that these people aren't good, or maybe you have a television show or whatever, but that doesn't necessarily mean anyone is the best medium. I mean, you may go to somebody who is very insecure about his or her abilities, and then in that particular connection, you get a good reading. It's just a thought.
Yeah, no, and it's true. We all have our own gifts. Those of us that are mediums and intuitives and everything, we all have our own gifts, and it's how we embrace them. And it's also how people perceive them, and how they sometimes it's what you tell them what they don't want to hear, and I don't believe in giving a negative reading. I try to stay away from that unless I feel that it's a dire straight emergency, and that I hear and that it's like right in my face, like nonstop. But I try to, what do you want to do is you want to guide them through your reading and what you're hearing and what you're seeing and what you're feeling. You not guide them as far as the reading goes, but guide them through a period of time in their life when they might actually need that inspiration. So you give that, that message to them, but in the message of hope.
Yes. Yeah, it's something really wonderful happened. I was doing a gallery reading last week, and this woman got up, and her father came through. Actually, it was her grandfather who raised her, so he was like, the father figure. And I said, he keeps talking about you swallowing something when you were a girl. She goes, well, I swallowed a penny one time, and I got real sick and all this, okay? So that was what he was talking about. And I said, you have little ones, don't you? Because I just felt that. She goes, yeah. I said something about you got to get the stuff like Drano. You got to get the Drano up where little hands can't reach it. And she goes, oh my God. She goes, yesterday my husband bought a can of Drano. Oh my God. She goes, I've never had Drano in the house before. And it was like, it was one of those moments, especially when you're doing it in public, where it was so spot on and it really felt good. And plus the crowd was like, oh, my gosh, and I'm just as surprised as this as anybody else, okay, because
right.
I'm just the conduit for the information. And when it came through that you swallowed something, you were a little girl, it made you very sick, and you have two little girls and Drano, and then the day before her husband bought a thing of Drano. And if the Drano people are listening, it's like, I'm not knocking your company. It's a great product, but everyone knows you don't drink it. And that was a warning.
You don't?
And that was one of the, yeah, really, that was one of the few times that I had absolutely no problem delivering a message of warning. Okay.
Exactly.
Plus, you know, on something like that, it's like, okay, let's get all the chemicals up. And then she goes, yeah, you know, I've been thinking about doing that. It's like, hello. All right, you got little children around. You get all those poisons and chemicals and toxic things up, I mean, on the highest cabinets where little hands cannot even begin to reach. So, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's times like that, where – you know, it's a dire emergency. You know, I can remember I picked up on a girlfriend. I hadn't talked to her in over a year. And I just got this urge that I needed to call her and tell her she needed to go to the doctors, like, right then and there. And she's like, why? I'm like, you need to leave work. And I'm asking you to please go to the doctor right now. I'm feeling your blood pressure's high. I'm worried about you. Please don't question me. Get up and go to the doctor right now. She did. I got a call from her husband. She was on the verge of a massive stroke. She was hospitalized. She was hospitalized. And he said, thank you. But it was one of those things where I kept hearing and I kept feeling. And then, you know, my head was just pounding. And I kept on seeing her face flash before me. And I knew she was working. And she's a very prominent person who has a very stressful job. But I was also picking up the other things that were going on in her life. You know, so she wasn't getting her sleep. She was being torn in several different directions and trying to be Superwoman. And I picked all this up and I called her. She goes, I don't have time, Renee. I really don't have time. What is the problem? I said, listen to me. Trust me. Believe me. Get up the hell with your job and go to the doctor or the ER right now, please. And I said, I don't care if you have to storm through that office. If you feel more comfortable going to your doctor, you need to do it now. And she did. And like I said, she was hospitalized and she was actually, the head pain was actually small little aneurysms that she was having. And she was on the verge of a major stroke. And now, 4 years later, she's doing great.
That's fantastic.
You know, but it was just one of those things where you just, you know, you just pick it up, you feel it. And those are like the times when you really want to say to somebody, like you said, or you pick up somebody's having severe kidney problems. Can you go to the doctor and just maybe have them check your kidneys? You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. I was doing a reading with this guy one time, and his mother came through, his grandmother and his uncle or something, and I got that they all died of lung cancer, and then they all came through to say, stop smoking. And he's looking at me, and I go, do you smoke? And he goes, well, yeah. You know, I had one of those kind of voices. And he goes, yeah, I've been thinking about stopping smoking. I go, all right, let me put it to you this way. Three people that you love who died are reaching across from heaven to tell you to stop smoking because they died from lung cancer. I said, What do you mean you're thinking about it?
You just do it.
Okay. Just do it. I said, you know, and I normally don't say things like this, but I'm gonna take a leap here. If you don't stop smoking, you're going to die of lung cancer like everybody else in your family did. You know? And you know what? A month later, he called me, and I said, if you stop smoking, well, no. And it's like, okay. Mm-hmm. I've done my job. I've delivered the message. It's, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make the horse drink. But anyway, Renee, it has been wonderful being here. And I do have to go. But I want to thank you for having me on the show. I want to thank all your listeners, and may God bless all of you. And if you want to get hold of me or find out more about my book, Never Letting Go, my website is the same name, neverlettinggo.com.
I just put that in the chat room again. And Mark, thank you so much for joining us. And it was really a pleasure. And I really, really enjoyed this. And, you know, maybe sometime you want to come back again. I would greatly appreciate it. And everybody is just really in the chat room. They're just loving you.
Well, I love them. And I really appreciate that. And thank you so much, Renee. It would be great to return. God bless you all, and have a great week. Monday is a, instead of looking at Monday as a Monday, look at it as the beginning of a whole new series of doors to open and opportunities to embrace.
That clean canvas to paint, nice bright colors.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Renee.
God bless you, Mark.
Right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
How awesome was that? I mean, he was so totally awesome. and, you know, his book, Never Letting Go. I read it this week, and it really is a fabulous book for anybody who is grieving. And even if you're not grieving, you know, it could be through a relationship, the loss of a relationship. It could be, you know, even like the loss of a friendship. You know, it really is a wonderful book to read. I mean, it's helpful in so many ways. Excuse me. What I want to do is I just want to say that Renee Live is broadcasting on the Word of Mom Radio Network. And, you know, we're just very excited to be here. And, you know, Dori's awesome. So you are on Word of Mom Radio Network. What I'd like to do right now is to play Dr. Spector's Health Tip of the Week.
Hello, Renee. And hello, everybody listening in tonight. This is Dr. Spector with your Health Tip of the Week again. Today, I'd like to talk about Osimum Sanctum. That's right, holy basil. And of course, every time I say that, I just want to yell out, holy basil, Batman! But that's just plain silly. Holy basil is actually an herb used in India for thousands of years for many different things. They use it for fever and common cold and inflammatory conditions and asthma and digestive issues. But what I would like to focus in on is its calming properties. Holy basil is used to help calm the mind, help get rid of anxiety, help quiet those ruminating thoughts so you can think clearly. And of course, as we all know, a quiet, strong, healthy mind leads to a quiet, strong, healthy body. Okay, folks, that's all for this week. This has been Dr. Spector, and if you have questions, you can email them to me at drspector@yahoo.com, or you can reach out to me on Twitter at drspector, or, of course, check out my Vitamin Pharmacy Facebook page. All right, everybody, have a wonderful night. Enjoy the rest of the show.
How awesome was that? That was really good information, and I didn't even know that. And Dr. Spector and I were talking for a little bit after he had sent that to me, and you know, it was just really good advice. So what I want to do again is tonight's artist is Layden Robinson, based out of Boston, Massachusetts. He is fabulous. I've known him for several months now. I've played his music actually before on the show, and it was really very well received. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to play this one song called We Got It Going, and then I will go into a song of Shaking Your Booties. So here we go. We Got It Going On by Layden Robinson. And you can get his music on iTunes, or you can get it on Amazon Music. And just in case you're wondering, I'll type it in the chat room. His website is laydenrobinson.wordpress.com. So here we go. And I think that was the wrong song. Okay, here we go. Let's try this one. That's more like it.
Done. In dance, day after dancing. still remember your face. I feel them back the feeling. God, I'm such a hopeless case. You say you love me, now you won't. You say you need me, now you don't. But I'm still wishing on a rainbow to come my way. Wishing on a rainbow. Wishing on a
And that song was called Wishing on a Rainbow. That was the correct song. So now, everybody, we're going to just pep it up just a little bit. And it's time to shake your booties. Here we go.
Love is like a bomb, 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 bomb,
right. Love that song. Now, it's interesting. I saw some questions in the chat room that I can answer for you all if you wanted a private message me in regard to, like, energy in heaven. I think Bones put that in there, but I want to get it right. And Terry, I think you had a question in regard to heaven. And also, it was interesting, Terry, you had brought up an interesting thing about how you had been, like, transported back to an accident that happened prior to you being where you were, and you saw the whole thing happen as if you were there. You know, it's very interesting because things like that do happen. I can remember when I was married and there was a very tragic accident, and being a member of the fire department, and everybody knew this person since she was really little, and the temperature was like below zero. And it, like I said, it was a very horrific accident. And when everybody got there and realized who it was just very traumatic for everybody involved. And we went to the calling hours, and I can remember standing there and her trying to talk to me, and I was trying to push it aside. Because at that time I was in a state of, I didn't want to accept anything at that point in time in my life. I had tried to shut down my own abilities. And I can remember driving home from the funeral home, and all of a sudden I just went in this totally different state. I was sitting in the car with this person, and this is what she wanted me to know, so that I could relay it to one specific family member who would understand my gifts. And she put me in the car in the passenger side, and she drove me down the road and then showed me what happened. She had a brand new car, but being as it was so cold, and she was on her way to work, and there was some water in the gas tank, but she was in a hurry. And she went, and they thought she was reaching down for, like, a cassette or a CD or something to put in as she was going through the intersection. It wasn't true. What had actually happened is the car kept on stalling on her, even though it was a brand new car. And as she went to pull out, the car had, like, started, and this huge semi came. And just before impact, she pulled me out. I was pulled out, and I can remember sitting there in the car and my mouth dropped wide open, and I said, I have to get, not right away, but at some point I will know when I see this one family member, I've got to get the message to the sister that this is what happened. And I can remember him looking at me like, huh? That's impossible. I said, no, it's not impossible. She put me in the car with her. And she showed me what happened, and she pulled me out. I was taken, yanked out before impact. And this is what happened. And it was really very interesting to me that this had happened. So then it was like probably 6 months later, and I saw the sister, and I felt the time was right. And I said to her, I said, I really need to talk to you, and I don't want you to think that I'm crazy, but I have a message from your sister, and the time is right. Because you don't always want to approach a family who just lost a loved one, especially during a tragic incident, you know, and say, well, blah, 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 blah. You know, you just can't do it. You have to feel that the time is right when you need to speak, you know, what you've been given, the information you've been given. And I said to the sister, I said, these are my capabilities. This is what I can do. They're gifts. And I need to tell you that this is what happened. And she started crying, and she said, I wondered. She said, because it just didn't make sense. She wouldn't do something like that. And I said, she didn't. This is what happened. And, you know, and it brought relief to her. And then eventually she was able to tell the rest of the family to kind of, like, when she felt the time was right, as to what happened. So, Terry, things like that do happen to people, especially people with gifts. you know, where a spirit, if you, you know, even if you're trying to shut it down, they will take you into this, you know, state where you are actually there, like you're actually there with them, so that you can pass the message on, even if it's just to one person, that this is what happened. And I want, you know, they want you to relay the message because it's very important to them because of the grieving that their family is going through. And, you know, I can remember that the reconstruction of the accident and everything was just so, it was just so intense, you know, in several hours, and the road was shut down. And, you know, like I said, it was below zero that day, you know, and it's hard, you know, because her stuff was thrown on the floor, that was, you know, the only thing that they could at that time really come up with, when, because the car was just, it was no more. It was unrecognizable. And so, you know, but that's not what happened, you know? So yes, things like that do happen. And, you know, especially if they feel that you're going to be receptive to that. But, you know, like I said, what was interesting is I was yanked out before actual impact had happened. So, which was actually the passenger side, but you wouldn't have known by the condition of the car that that's what it was. So those things do happen. Now, Bones, you was it you that had the question in regard to people passing on and being energy and how much energy? Can you type that in the chat room, in the either again in the chat room or in private message so I can see that? Or was it you, Terry? One of you guys had asked a question in regard to you know, how much energy, how many spirits can heaven hold? I think that was it. I'm not certain if that was the question. I don't want to scroll. I know it was way back, and I didn't want to interrupt Mark at that time because he was really on a roll and doing really well. Okay. Yeah, that was like really cool. Terry just said that in the past he had a vision of a friend's house on fire while it was going on, and you called out to him and it saved his life because it awoke him. And that's really cool. That's really cool. Now, I know what the question was. I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, the question had to do with people passing on and being like in human appearance on the other side. Is that what it was, and how many? Okay. You wanted to know. Okay. It was Terry. Does heaven have unlimited space? Of course it does. I mean, because if you think about it, we're all energy. And so when we're over there, we're not in the physical shape or form that we are here on Earth. If the solid image, yet we are not in a solid image, we're energy. So basically, you know, the other side, okay, and I'll explain this because it was really awesome. It was really, really awesome when, when he explained it in his book, and it's like we've talked about on the show, the two sides, the physical world and the spiritual world, they run side by side, okay? And the way he explained it in his book is that the spiritual side, the other side, is running in a different dimension and really, really, really fast, okay? So they're running on a higher level of conscious and energy flow, okay? Because it's all energy over there. So what's happening is this energy is going really fast. In order for them to communicate with us, okay, they have to slow down. Okay, they have to slow down in order to make their appearance or whatever it is that they want to say or how they're going to say it appear, anything like that. They need to slow down in order to be able to communicate with us, but also pull in the energy. Okay, if that makes any sense. But on the other side, they don't, they don't look like that, and you know, every day it's just going. That's how they appear to us. They might appear to us initially as the way that you might remember them age-wise when they passed on, but then they can go down to an age where they feel more comfortable, where you might even not even recognize them. You know, so that's why they come to us in a way that you'll recognize them, and then they might transform into a younger age in a time when, you know, they were very happy, they enjoyed life. And so that is one of the things. So on the other side, I mean, heaven, it's basically the universe. It's you know, the other side, it runs parallel with us. There is no time. There is no such thing as space. So as far as everybody being in a solid image, no. Does that make sense to everybody? And, you know, does that answer your question, Terry? Okay. There was also something else that I was going to mention in regard to his book, and I just, it popped in, and then it just popped back out, and I'm trying to think of what it was, because it was also very true and very informative that we've also mentioned on the show, but I wanted to reiterate it. And of course, it's not there. So let me see. Were there any more questions that I could answer in the meantime while I'm trying to come up with this statement? It had to do with the other side. This is crazy. And I got rambling on and I lost it. Okay, awesome, Terry. So basically, you know, what he had said tonight was all so very real, you know, and how they appear to us and the messages that they want to relay and for us to know. And that in itself is, you know, people just really don't understand. And what is it really completely like on the other side? What is it they do? They do so much that you can't explain, you know, in just a couple of words. Like he said, it is like trying to teach engineering or physics or what Einstein had stated, you know, to a kindergartner. You know, it's so totally different that we ourselves don't even understand completely everything that goes on, because we ourselves don't comprehend some of it. It's just one of those things. Maria said shiny. But it definitely is a different experience, you know? And like I said, in order for them, oh, I know what it was, the lights, the communicating through lights, energy, excuse me, our spirits, when they come to us, they communicate in many different ways. And I think I've mentioned a couple of times about my lights. One time for like 2 weeks we're doing it. My home looked like an absolute carnival because all of my lights would dim and then they'd go really bright. And it was like all in synchronicity. It was all together. And it really, really surprised me. At first I was nervous because, you know, I had people checking it out. I called the utility company and there was nothing wrong, you know? And then I'm like, ah, you know, who's trying to communicate with me? And it was actually a Native American. He was trying to explain a couple of things to me and was actually communicating through my lights. And like one light in particular, when I was talking to this Native American, would literally light up so bright. And I'd be like, okay, you're getting angry and you need to stop doing this and get the wattage back down to where it needs to go. And then it would slowly go back down. I'm like, okay, for you to talk to me, you need to communicate to me in a proper manner. And I understand you're upset. And I understand you're angry at things that had happened. And it happened to be here on this property, you know. And it was very interesting. And it finally did slow down. And finally, when I got the information that was needed, my life stopped doing it. They stopped doing it. And when it started, you know, like it was outside lights, the inside lights, it was everything. And my daughter would sit in here and say, Mom, that spirit's trying to talk to you again. Will you please do something about it? You know, and will you talk to them and make them stop, you know, because it was kind of freaking them out. Yes. So basically, it was really, really interesting. So they will communicate with us through different means, especially when it comes to energy. They are energy. And yeah, I'm glad that you didn't inhale, or I'm not inhaling wine. What is that up with that, Bones? No. Anyway, you know, they will, their energy, they need energy to communicate with us to appear. So that in itself is really important for us to understand, is that they will go through means, different means to communicate with us. And so like if your TV, you know, flicker goes on when it was off and then goes off again, you know, that's a form of communication. If your lights do something, if something moves that, you know, wasn't supposed to be moving, you know, and again, we've discussed, you know, faint smells, you know, these are ways of knowing in particular that if you are grieving a loved one, ways that they will communicate with you, but that they don't necessarily come to you always in a familiar way. But when you call them in, pay attention to these clues, whether it be through feeling, you know, your different senses, you know, different things that are going on in the house. They will always try to give you a clue. And a lot of times it's through energy because they need all the energy they can to make this happen. Does this make sense to you, that it takes a lot of energy for them to be able to do what it is that they're going to do to let you know that they're there, or like to talk to, you know, mediums and stuff, that the energy that they need to do this is very strong, and then they'll fade, you know, they'll stop, they'll go away, you know, and that's one thing that we need to be aware of. So if you are grieving somebody, you know, definitely, like I said, when you pay attention, when you think of them, you're calling them in, you know, pay attention to the little signs. Yes, Terry, you're right. You know, cats are like that. All pets are very attuned to the other side and will react in very different ways. And their behaviors are always very good in letting us know when somebody is here from the other side. So definitely, you know, just pay attention to the little clues that are given to you. And it's very, very important. Anybody else have any more questions? But, you know, just to reiterate again, what Mark was saying is that, you know, when somebody is, and I was actually very thrown back with this, you know, with somebody who had actually, you know, lost a child, and somebody had said to them, and I can't imagine, well, you could just go have another kid, you know, make another child. And you know, I was totally thrown back by that, because that is like so total insensitiveness that, you know, I mean, why would you say something like that? Who's grieving, especially a child, you know? And it just totally threw me back. And you probably all heard me say, oh my God, you know, just remember that if you're talking to somebody who is grieving, you know, try to be a little bit sensitive, you know, to what it is that they're going through, because we ourselves might not understand, you know, because each person does react differently to that situation. And we want to be careful that, you know, what we say, how they're going to comprehend it is going to be different than us who are not grieving that person or that child. You know, you don't want to send them over the edge either. So it's very important. And sometimes I say, you know, that no words speak much better than words. You know, if you can't find the right words, sometimes it's just a hug. You know, and just say, I don't have the words to say to you right now. And silence is sometimes the best form of communication with something like that, with somebody who's grieving, because they can see it in your eyes. And they do pay attention to your eyes. I don't know if you've noticed, when you see somebody who's grieving, they look you in the eyes. So words are not necessary, because they already they already see what it is that you want to say, you know. So that's very, very important. So what I want to do again is, because Layden is the indie artist of the evening, and you can find his music on Amazon, on iTunes, again, from Boston, Massachusetts, Layden Robinson, and I'm going to play another song for us, okay? And this one's called Deepness. Again, Layden Robinson, and like I said, I've known him for several months now, and one of the songs actually that we've played on the show is Wielding Dupep, that he's been on, and I just love his music. He's so awesome. And again, you can purchase his albums on iTunes and Amazon Music. He's really great, and his website is www.laydenrobinson.com. WordPress.com, and that's LaydenRobinson, Layden Robinson. So I'm actually going to close out the show. I hope you all enjoyed it. And actually, I'm like a couple minutes early. How like strange is that? But really, I hope you all had a great time. And, you know, and I hope that, you know, you enjoyed what Mark had say, and that it gave a little bit more understanding of what it's like on the other side and what they are trying to convey to those of us that are grieving, and also how people react differently to grieving, which is really important that, you know, we understand that the grieving process takes a long time, but to not get caught in that depression to accept that the physical part is not here anymore, but spiritually and energy-wise and spirit and soul, that they are still alive because it's eternal, and that they're still with us and that love is still there. And, you know, it's really important for us to understand that. So anyway, I wish you all much love, light, and happiness. I, you know, wish you all a fabulous, fabulous week. Okay? And enjoy and love each other and just embrace each day as it's new. Okay? So good night, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.
In the firelight, destiny will fall in its place. Blinded by the firelight, a man confronting his own face. There's a broken man down by the river. What do you think he sees? Same broken man has never gone underneath. He's trying to understand his spirit, trying to find his own way, trying to realize that he's near it, destiny embracing faith. Destiny will fall in its place. Blind.